Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to podcast number 6. This is Sarah. I'm here with John. And our guest speaker today is Nate Summers from PrimalNate.com. And also, we've been working with Nate at LivingConnectionFirst.net for a couple years now. So I'll pass it over to John to introduce a little bit more about Nate.
There's a lot to say about this guy. I've known him for a long time. I think we met in Washington State at Wilderness Awareness School in 1996. And you should know that Nate is an author. He's a survival skills expert. He's an internal martial arts teacher. He's also an outdoor guide. And he has a degree in traditional Chinese medicine. We go back a ways, and we share a lot of passions, and some of which we're going to share today because, Nate, you know, before I say hello to you and let you talk, you were around, you know, this we're on a kind of a series on H. Shields teachings and how they've helped people. But when I first met you, we were still doing 6 Shields. And you might remember that because it was right around 99, 98, where we kind of wavered back and forth. And then we said, no, we got to do 8. And that was probably confusing as all get out for a lot of people. But you were part of the core team at that point, and we were all part of that conversation. Just say hi. And what are your recollections of those early days?
Yeah. Thanks, John. Thanks, Sarah. It's an honor to be here. And yeah, going back in time to those days, I mean, it was just such a fun time. And a really vibrant time, you know, so many people of different ages enthusiastically throwing themselves into this nature connection work and having this holistic model, right? Like that we would, you know, put up diagram every once in a while with these 6 directions. And there was, you know, different things related to, in the north with trees and survival skills, and the east, naturalist training and hazards. And it just felt like, oh, here we finally had something that we could sink our teeth into and really help us on our path, you know. And there was this interesting thing that would happen, though, where we would sometimes find ourselves in these conversations about, hey, like, look, there's this whole section here, the northwest and southeast axis hasn't been filled in yet. And then people would speculate, well, what does that mean? What is that? And thankfully, eventually it was filled in. And then that was really felt like a completion, you know, like felt like, oh, now we can really go forward. Now this can really move. And if we track the movement of these ideas in the greater field of nature, survival skills, deep nature connection work, I think that filling in those 2 shields kind of was one of the catalysts that really took it to the next level.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I remember it was Jen Wolf with her artist eye. She kept saying, as she stared at these flip charts with the 6 shields on it, she says, my artist sense just says there's something missing here. And she kept trying to pester us into putting in 2 more shields. So we did that one day. And then one person in the audience raised their hand and said, what do they mean, John? I'm like, I don't know. I just drew them up there. Now we're all committing to this. We got to figure out what it means. So I traveled around the U.S. that year, going from art of mentoring community to art of mentoring community, asking people. We almost were kind of like having it was almost like a contest, you know, like a naming contest. You know, what does this Southeast Shield really represent? If East is hazards and South is tracking, what is Southeast? And I remember Warren Brush at Santa Barbara got really excited when we went down there for a wilderness youth project event, and it was an art of mentoring. He said, I think we figured out Southeast. And we're like, well, what is it? He said, well, if East is birth and early childhood and South is adolescence and teen, then halfway in between must be 9-year-olds. And what do 9-year-olds love to interact with in nature? They love to pick berries. They love to catch lizards. So it became the species list of fun things to catch or gather, right? The things that motivate children to go on errands. And that's how that came. So that I credit Warren Brush and those guys. And I don't remember who brought in heritage species in the Northwest. But then it was the Hawaiians, Nate, that you and I worked with, whatever year that was, I think 2001. I'm not sure. But when Antipuna said, what's missing from your map, you know, what that axis, northwest, southeast, represents is past ancestors, present in the center, future children. And so that's how we ended up kind of figuring out what those last two shields were. But then it was a mess because when we had to redo all the programs, we had published all this stuff based on six shields. And it's like, I'm still catching up with that, you know, to this day. But you're right. I really feel like when that eight shields dropped, you know, for one, it looked like a pizza, which was awesome. And I could say, yeah, there's like eight slices on this pizza. You don't want to eat the whole pizza at once. You got to eat it one bite at a time off of one slice. Gave us a lot of metaphors to work with, and it did fill in and make more granular even what we're going to be talking about today, right? Because in a recent podcast that Sarah and Nate and I shared with our village called the Monday Musings, I was telling a story about when I had reached a certain level of experience from my mentoring with Tom Brown. And I'd heard him speaking at the Tracker School in multiple classes. I started teaching there in 1978. So I heard him repeat this in multiple classes over many years. Somewhere in my kind of mid to late 20s, I had this experience that I heard him talk about in the front of the room. And it was the question of, you know, invisibility. And I don't mean like, yes, I had already been trained and learned, you know, to put mud and charcoal and, you know, do all those things, right? And buff myself in and, you know, be able to disappear physically, like literally hide where people walk and they're walking right by me, one, you know, 6 inches away. I'm hidden in the underbrush and half buried in the earth. And, you know, I did. Those are physical scout skills, right? But he talked about this form of invisibility, which was more of an energetic form of invisibility where it's almost like you have a mask around you and people overlook you. They don't see you. And he was explaining that you could hide in the middle of a room. In sharing that story, Sarah remembered that my two children are really good at that, you know, because they grew up with the same skills. And, you know, I'm guilty as charged. You know, I'll be like, okay, where's Finch? You know, and I'll go to the stairs to yell downstairs, hey, Finch, let's go. And he'll say to me, I'm right here, Dad. And I'm turning around. He's sitting right on the rocking chair in the living room, like plain as day. But he certainly was invisible up to that moment. And as Sarah pointed out, it was because he can get to a really quiet place inside because he's got all that deep nature connection background, you know, grew up that way. And same with Willa. You know, so we were kind of reflecting on that in that conversation between the three of us. And it occurred to me a really helpful thing to talk about with people because, Nate, I know, you know, one of the reasons we want to do this podcast with you is because you're working on a book in your, is it the Scout Craft series? And this is the first book that you're publishing in that series, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And I am right smack dab in the middle of editing it and, you know, ready to, you know, hopefully get it up on Amazon in the next few days and definitely by the end of the month. And yeah, you know, this is a deep journey into this whole world of the scout and invisibility and camouflage and awareness is all a part of it. And, you know, what you're talking about, John, this idea of like almost like there's the outer camouflage of like what I physically do with my body, right? Like what I do with actually my clothes or something. And then there's the inner camouflage, right? Like the inner state of being and how that inner state of being, you know, if it's in the right state, that inner quiet, that quiet mind, that sacred silence, yeah, suddenly like people can walk right by you or the birds don't fly away from you or the deer comes right up to you at, you know, when you're at your sit spot. And this happened to me last summer. Like I had to get out of the way of a deer that was walking into the river to cross the river because it was like, and it was clear it could see me. It must have been able to see me because I wasn't like, I didn't have a ghillie suit on, you know, I wasn't like, you know, buried in the sand or the dirt. And it was like practically nudging me out of the way to cross this river to get to the other side of the Tolt River. So yeah, there's this inner silence that can happen. And, you know, some people are like, well, why doesn't that happen to me? Or how does that, you know, how can I make that happen? Or what does that do? And I've had some very deep conversations over the last few weeks and few months with people, including John and Sarah, about that process. And you know, how can we help people on that journey of like really embodying awareness, like 360 degree awareness, like you are able to pay attention to yourself and your surroundings and the layers of what's going on around you 360 degrees. You know, and that's your hearing, that's your sense of feeling, that's like you know, being able to look around as well. And there's this sense of like what emerges in us, right? Like that, you know, if we try to, you know, make a task list and I'm like, well, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and this. Well, that might get us there. But there's also this like process of we just gradually are doing these things over and over from this multifaceted approach, right? Like that's one of the things I really love about the Eight Shields approach is it's so multifaceted that suddenly that 360 degree awareness, that inner silence, that flowing and blending with the landscape naturally starts to happen. It's an emergent property, right? It's like something that the more I try to get it, maybe it doesn't really get me there. I actually get in the way of myself. But the more I can like be and let go, the more it starts to happen. And so, you know, I was just, you know, reading the section of my book where I was talking about how much I love to teach people to be more comfortable in their bodies outside in nature.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's where my curiosity is. The, you know, grandiosity of becoming invisible is very enticing. And I know it's also a very natural process as you're both describing, but also a journey, right? So how would you use or have you used the Eight Shield design principles to help people on that journey, to know where they are on that journey, to give some kind of context of where do I start? What should I expect, you know, along the way? And how many times kind of around that circle of the Eight Shields, you know, taking that spiral path through, what does that journey look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think about with kids, and it's so natural, right? It's like, it's so sort of like this effortlessness, you know, with kids, because, you know, maybe they don't have the same inhibitions we might have or something like that, that they, especially that like 9 to 10 to 12 year old range, just the enthusiasm in which you can get them into these things of just like, you know, running into the bushes and hiding from each other or sneaking along a trail. You know, it takes very little motivation to get kids, most people don't realize this, to get kids to move quietly through the forest. All you have to like let them know is they might see more animals or there might be another group of kids sneaking around on them. There's certainly an amount of, you know, inspiration and excitement, you know, it's helpful to generate. And then, yeah, allowing people to go deeper through giving them, you know, tools to go practice. But there is also this element of letting go and relaxing into your being that happens that they have to find on their own, you know? Mm. And that can be like a day, like what I just described, right? Like that could just be a day, like in the afternoon, say after I'm showing all these stalking exercises all morning, right? And we've been doing this intensive stalking. In the afternoon, I'm with a group of adults and we just play this game and suddenly everybody gets what we were trying to accomplish in those stalking exercises. Or we could be talking about a year-long journey in the middle of which there's this intensive focus on, you know, being like a mountain lion, you know, that people are like trying to move like a mountain lion or they're trying to move like a bear. And then at some point they're just like, oh, whatever. And they just kind of wander in nature and they're just like, you know, going over logs and climbing over boulders and climbing through trees and flipping around like, and it feels perfectly at ease.
Mm. Yeah. So you're kind of describing the natural learning cycle, right? Starting with inspiration in the east and then moving toward motivation in the southeast. And then that focused, giving those focused exercises in the south and then moving into playfulness, that embodiment in the southwest. And that's really cool to see it in a day structure, right? To allow that natural flow and then over the course of a whole year program as well.
Yeah, I will jump in there because, you know, that the steps that Sarah just brought you through are the true beginner, you know, that inspired person. Oh, I read all these books. I read Primal Nate's Scout book. I'm going to so be invisible, dude. Watch. You just watch, right? But they don't have a clue yet what to do, right? They might have read the book and they might have some ideas, but they're inspired, right? Because the good stories from Nate inspired them. So that's kind of what we call sunrise or the east. And then when you go into that motivated place that Sarah was talking about, you've gone to that mid-morning part of the Eight Shields, which in the Northern Hemisphere, we call it the Southeast. That's the 9 a.m. time. That's that motivated time where they're just out there practicing, playing those games and being in the scout games, as Nate was saying, right? And then they hit that third stage where they start to really want to be a learner. And that's what we call midday. And that's focused. You know, I'm really focused on getting these skills. And as Nate said, you can get in the way of it, because usually when you get focused, you also might get a little too serious, right? And you end up taking yourself too serious, and then you get in your own way. But when you hit that fourth level, that's when you kind of let go. That's when you're like, you know what? I'm alienating all my friends because I'm being way too serious about this. Nobody wants to play scout games with me anymore. I'm just going to let go and just have fun with this, you know, and you sort of like go into that wandering, relaxed spirit. But that's when that intuition happens. You know, when a person gets to that relaxed stage, that's when these skills are really getting embodied, you know. And I want to point out a couple of things. So we went through four stages, right? We went through that sunrise, and we went to mid-morning, and we went to midday. Now we're in that mid-afternoon, that relaxed time. But, you know, the journey when I was young and how I got to this place of invisibility kind of naturally, you know, like I wasn't striving for it. I wasn't even thinking about it, honestly. You know, I was just having fun, right? Climbing up in a tree and going into this deep silence. And all of a sudden I'm surrounded by crows and they're only 1 or 2 feet away from me. And I realized, wow, I think I'm in that state that Tom's talking about. And then I kind of snapped out of it and became aware of the duality of I'm a person in a tree looking at a crow. And as soon as I got into that state of mind, the crows exploded out of the treetop shouting. But prior to that, I was in that really deep silence where I had allowed my senses to be really fully immersed, you know, and to feel the sun and the breeze and the tree rocking and feeling myself kind of merging with the tree, you know, just sort of in this really liminal, open, relaxed state. But, you know, when I was a boy, you know, Tom would say, if you want to be a good scout, you have to learn from the best teachers. And I'm like, well, who are they? And he said, well, it's the animals. You know, no one's a better teacher than John. I guarantee you, you know, you show me deer tracks by your sit area. How many deer are actually at your sit area? How many deer do you actually see? You know, and I only really saw one doe. He said, let's go out there, you know, and then he showed me the tracks of a buck. And he explained to me that this was an old buck and that it, look at how it was using these trails to sneak around me without me noticing. He said, seeing the doe is one thing, John, but seeing that buck is really where you're going to learn scout skills, because that buck is a scout. Look at what he's already done to you. See, I came here today to show you these tracks. You know, he's been going right by your sit area and you don't even know it. I'm like, whoa, that's kind of cool. And he already done that with me with a fox many years earlier. So I was kind of used to this, you know, let the animals become my teachers, learn to get up close to them. And of course, he challenged me to touch a deer. He said, you really don't know a deer until you can touch it, you know, and that left me sneaking up on deer in fields and all this stuff until I finally figured out what it really meant to touch a deer. And it took me several years to figure that out. But in the meantime, I'm getting to know the bird language and all the tracks and sign. And, you know, I was in my teens. I wasn't, you know, I was a decent tracker, but I wasn't like where I am now. But I certainly had, you know, the basics down, and I knew all the trees and the plants and the weather and all that. And all of that stuff is part of scout training. You know, it's like, and it adds up slowly over time. You know, there's a whole journey of integration, you know. Mm-hmm. And once you get to that place where you embody, you know, you're in that, you know, what we would call that fourth archetype, or in the Northern Hemisphere, we call it the Southwest archetype. When you're in that fourth layer where you've just relaxed and become embodied, well, at that point, you know, it's time for you to figure out how to help share with others, you know, and learn to be a good teacher, a good instructor, because now you have something to offer. You know, you're now a role model, not just full of information, but you also role model the skills, you know. So when you hear that Nate is an instructor of these things, you know, he's not just a guy who's got book knowledge. He's got all this embodied experience, you know. And so now he's at that fifth level, which we call the West. Whether you're in the Northern or Southern Hemisphere, it's still the West, right? You know, from there, we move into that spirit of the community helper. So when Nate gets a little older and his son grows up and graduates out of high school and goes off to college, and Nate's got more gray hair than he does now, and he's kind of slowing down, he's going to be thinking like a community helper. You know, it's like, that's where you go from being an instructor. You start looking around with more wide angle vision. How can I be supportive of this lineage, for instance? How can I help this knowledge pass forward? How can I support other instructors to rise? You know, you start to think that way because you're actually getting ready to become an elder, which is that seventh stage. And then finally, you go into that really late stage elderhood, which is when you become like what Paul Rayfield would describe as a spiritual advisor. You know, you're in your 80s and, you know, you're not moving around much, but your brain is so powerful, or your spirit is so powerful. When you speak to groups, they really feel your power and all that. So you can't kind of rush those last three stages. But, you know, we have control over those first five easily. And, you know, just to make the connection between what we call, this is called the profile journey in Coyote's Guide, these eight stages of learning. But I wanted to really kind of point out, where do scout skills become magical? And I think, you know, when you practice them enough, and maybe it's better to say play with them enough, that's when they go into that fourth stage, which is where it becomes internalized. What do you think of that, Sarah?
Yeah, I love that. The profile journey of the scout. And I'm also really curious about other ways of applying the eight shields principles. The two places that I'm curious about hearing from you, Nate, are if there is a set of exercises that you have for practicing scout, how would one apply the eight shields to move through a flow of exercises or ways of tuning into the scout spirit? And the other perspective I'm curious about is a scout mission. If you're going out on a scout mission, what are like the eight shields? What would be the natural cycle of a scout mission?
Ooh, that's a great challenge right there. All right, I'll definitely do the first one. I may be able to do the second one. I think with the first one, you know, I'm actually on the cusp of teaching a scout movement class or course that's coming up. And I actually am doing this by request because some people reached out to me. They're like, we really want to do this, you know? And I was like, well, let me find somebody for you to do this. And then I like looked around and then finally I was like, I guess I'm going to have to do it, you know? And I'm enthusiastically excited about doing it. And I appreciate people's inspiration around it. So in the course, though, we're going to have an 8-week course, I think. And we're going to do what you're talking about, Sarah, right? Like the first class is going to be mostly just like getting inspired and getting, and a lot of the inspiration may even happen before people show up at the first class, but we're going to get like really into our bodies. And there's going to be some time where we leave that first class and you're just going to be excited about what you learned, but you're not going to necessarily remember much, or you might not even be able to replicate much of what you actually learn. And then we're going to get into like more like orienting our bodies, right? Like, so we'll go a little bit deeper and, you know, so maybe in the first class, we're going to, you know, learn how to open up all of our joints, and we're going to like get on all fours, and maybe we're going to do a little bit of walking exercises. But, you know, by like the second and third class, then we're starting to get more comfortable being on all fours. We're starting to get into more advanced walking practices. Our bodies now start to become more loose and natural. We're like, okay, this is what we're doing, right? Like the first class, people are going to be there and they're going to be like, I don't know what we're doing, but this is cool. I just want to do it. And then in the middle of that course, right, we're going to get into like all of the different key ways where you can move on all fours, and what does each of them teach you, and what is like, why is it important, and what's the idea behind it? What's the like, what is this, you know, like, and people are going to ask like, well, you know, how do you apply this, you know, to like scout situations and tactical situations, and we'll go into that, you know? And then but after people start to really get into that, at some point, you know, towards 2/3 or 3/4 of the way through, we're going to just play. And we're going to just be silly and just be like, no, just like move like a bear. Like, don't care about like how this applies to a tactical situation. Just have fun with it, you know. And probably towards the end, I'll even be like, you know, hey, we're going to start class today. Why don't each of you show us a movement? Like, what's your movement you want to do for us to warm up? Like, what can you contribute? And then towards the very last couple of classes, we'll talk about like where it came from. And, you know, maybe I'll show them some footage of like, you know, some really amazing like internal martial arts masters or somebody who's like, look at this guy, like, look at how he moves like a dragon. Like, this is what we could get towards, you know? So that's, I think, you know, in the course of a class or a course, how you could do that, right? And it's funny because, you know, even, you know, when we're talking about this topic, you know, even the way I'm writing my book, you know, each chapter is kind of doing this, right? Like there's usually a hook, some sort of idea or sentence that starts a chapter, and then there's usually a story about the topic, and then, you know, we go into like, okay, like, well, that's the story, but what are we actually talking about? And then there's a whole bunch of details about that, and then there's some actual exercises. And then there's some reflection about like, okay, what do these exercises mean? And then you wrap up the chapter and then it's like the next chapter, you know? So, you know, this can be applied to writing projects very successfully, actually, you know, and I unconsciously do that as well. In terms of a scout mission, I think that the very brief nutshell version is setting the stage, you know, with like the objective of like, oh, we're going to go sneak on this fire and see who or what's over there, with an element of danger, possible danger, real or imagined. You can see how that's the whole like northeast, east inspired thing. And then, you know, the actual objective, laying it out, what you need to do, that's kind of that southeast, right? Like, okay, here's what we need you to do, and turning people loose. And then that, you know, like the key part, I think, is going to be a lot of that time in the south of like sneaking in and going in. And, you know, people think that that's where the learning is going to happen. They're like, oh, I'm going to get so close and I'm going to figure it out. But hopefully at some point, you know, during that multi-hour scenario or whatever it might be, they're going to let go a little bit and just like, you know, look up and like, notice the moonlight, you know, like shining down, or they're going to hear the birds, or maybe they're not going to hear birds, or they're just going to be like laying on the ground and be like, oh, this is so awesome. Right. And then they all sneak back, you know, to the other fire and they share about their experience, right? Like that's the, like, you know, they're coming together and sharing, and maybe there's, you know, if you're lucky, you know, maybe there's some elders there that are sitting there witnessing and catching that story. And then there's maybe some opportunity for those elders to ask them a question or two, and they reflect, right? Then they're like, oh, what am I taking from this, right? Like, what is the lesson for me? You know, the idea being that that might take them to a deeper level of integration. They're like, oh, like this applies to not just this scenario and sneaking on a fire, but this is like something that'll be with me for the rest of my life. Mm. And then that goes with them into their dreams or their dream time or the next phase, right?
Yeah, I love that. That was awesome. And that place of letting go for me on a scout mission, and for people's, I did a scout class with Tom Brown's Tracker School, and we go out on scout missions every night. And there was a point in the night where, yeah, there was this focused kind of intensity of the mission. And then you go into a state of flow where it's like you're just moving through the brush, like you're not even in a body. And you kind of reach this place where you're not thinking at all. And you're just, yes, an embodiment of the wind is what it feels like. So cool. Thank you so much for that. I was just going to say your class sounds amazing. And I totally will be there.
Me too. But you know, the thing I love about this, what Nate just shared with you, he said something here. So we are talking about embodied awareness, right? So both Sarah talking about becoming the wind and moving in flow, and Nate saying the same thing, you know, noticing the moonlight or whatever, you know, hitting that place of embodied awareness. Are you aware, listeners, that Nate has hit the place of embodied Eight Shields practitioner? Because he's just spinning one Eight Shields wheel after the next. You know, his class runs on Eight Shields. You know, day one is east, day two is southeast. You know, he's just going right around the wheel for you. He writes books that way. He doesn't even know he's doing it. His chapters are set up that way. And he just whipped out a scout mission off the top of his head. You can tell, Nate, you've been working with this for a long time. And it's really fun to just listen to you being even playful in your design on the spot, you know, so...
And you know, I think that's the reflection of the Eight Shields themselves that is so natural. And then you kind of can't stop using them for everything that you do, because once you lock into that flow, it's like, oh yeah, this is just how it's done. It's done well this way.
Exactly. And I love that image of the scouts coming back, Nate, and sitting around the fire, telling their stories to each other, which is obviously the West. But if there's an elder there to catch their stories and ask questions, it pulls out that inner reflection, which is that northwest or sixth time around the wheel, right? Because in the northern hemisphere, we call it northwest. And then the elders might lay out some principles, or they might realize some principles, which is that north star, you know, that seventh step. And as you said, it goes into the dream time, which is the eighth step. So I just wanted to, you know, name that, because you were doing such a beautiful job of eighth shielding everything you just talked about. And I just wanted to call attention to that. But thank you. That's a very inspiring story. And I know you'll do well with this project, as you do with so many others. And thanks for what you do for so many people. And just wondering if you have any reflections on the way out, Nate, and how people can find you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's always fun to talk about this. I find it super inspiring myself. It's also very empowering and, you know, revitalizing to have these conversations. And every time somebody sends me an email about a story or their journey, it like lifts me back up and gets me re-inspired to do more of this work. So thank you everybody for that. And yeah, I have a website. It's primalnate.com. But the book that's coming out, it's called Shadow Survival. And yeah, it's the first book planned in a series. You know, and the first one's really a deep immersion into things like camouflage, invisibility, evasion, awareness. And the second planned book is actually going to be all on movement. It is really about the embodiment. It's about, you know, things like animal forms and stalking and, you know, internal martial arts and different footwear and movement practices. So yeah, check it out. And yeah, the book should be on sale at Amazon by the end of the month. So probably in the next like 7 days, you can pre-order it. But I think the March 21st is the planned release date. There'll be like paperback, ebook, and hardback. So check it out. And I'd love to hear what you think. And this is super important. Best way to support authors, at least support me as an author, is buy the book and then leave a review on Amazon. That's so important, like to get like that first 10 or 20 reviews, the 4 or 5 star reviews, those 10 or 20 reviews, you know, is really important. So thanks, everybody.
Right on. Thank you, Nate.
Yeah, I want to thank Nate and Sarah for your great questions. And it was fun to feel your scoutness, the two of you, as you were reminiscing about scout experience, you know. Just really a nice conversation to drop in on with the two of you. And I know, Nate, we'll have another podcast someday, even to talk about that relationship of the movement and animal forms, because that's something we both really love. And I know Sarah does too. So I look forward to having you back, and thanks, and good luck with all your projects. Until next time, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.